So in terms of putting a brief together, there I would do two things in a parallel track. Some of the logistical paperworky kinds of things, which you can get done when your brain's not functioning very much. And at the same time, the thing that is the hanger off of which all things get hung, which are, what are the things that the judge did wrong in your case? Okay, because that's what you're saying to the appeals court. You're saying, please look at what the judge did and decide with me that what they did was wrong. So those are referred to as issues. I think of them more like questions because they're worded like questions. And typically these are going to, and David, you're going to have to tell me if I don't have the camera turned so you can see stuff. But typically you're going to create a set of questions.
I can't tell if I could see who. No, that's good.
Did the judge err? Oh my God, I can't even write. Let's try it again. You're going to create a series of questions. Did the judge, and this means the lower court, the housing court judge, err in doing whatever it was? And you'll have a series of these questions. And the trick here is, do not censor yourself. Anything you thought the judge did wrong, create a question. Did the judge err in accepting documents on the same day from the other side so that I couldn't defend myself? Did the judge err in letting the clerk accept documents that were never served on me? Did the judge err in letting the other side talk for the entire time and give me 1 minute? Those are fine. You know, and then you've got all the things that you wrote in your arguments. Did the judge err in never even addressing my argument about such and such, but giving judgment to the other side? And then there are all the specific things that you were asking the judge to do yourself. So, you know, they should have found that the foreclosure was invalid because of active military service, or they should have, found that the plaintiff didn't have standing because they didn't own the property. All of those things are valid questions. And the trick is just brainstorm them. I would almost keep a piece of paper and a pen on me because, you know, you'll be halfway to the market and go, oh man, there was that day they did such and such. Just write it down.
Does this apply to both, like, reply briefs and
yes,
blue and red?
Yes.
That you want to do that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, your reply brief, you can either use their questions, the ones they raised. My experience is that I almost always rewrite them slightly because they've already tilted it in the way they ask the question. So even if you're asking the same question in theory, you may want to rewrite the bias out of it because they're usually, I can't remember whose document we were looking at, but they literally had put into the statement of facts all of their legal conclusions.
Yeah.
No, the loan wasn't accelerated. No, this didn't, no, yes, we had standing. Then I'm like, what's that doing in your statement of facts? If they do that to facts, you know what they're doing to the questions. They're just completely altering reality. So it's much easier to get a yes answer if you convince the party that you're asking the question of that your question's the right question. So, yeah. And I've seen it done either way. Some reply briefs don't have their own questions. They just make an argument. But it's better. It's the format they're used to seeing. You always do better if you're using a format they're used to seeing.
She just said red and blue. What does that mean?
Red and blue and gray. So the courts, this goes to the production side of things. The courts have defined what cover the brief has by color, tells them which brief it is. So the blue brief is the appellant, the party that brings the appeals brief. Red is the brief from the appellee, the person who's being taken to the appeals court. And the gray cover is for when the appellant wants to respond to the red cover brief from the appellee. So, and then those of us who've done amicus briefs, they go in green. So, and there are other colors, but those are the only ones you'll ever deal with, probably. Part of the thing is, and this is a habit I don't think we'll be able to get the higher courts out of, but if you look at the docket in your case, it will say which briefs have come in, and they don't say appellant or appellee, they say the blue brief is in, we're waiting for the red brief. So you, if you don't know what the colors mean, you actually can't follow what the docket is telling you. So it does matter.
Oh, yes.
Good question. So, all right. So your collecting of questions about what the judge did wrong is an ongoing process. I recommend you start it early so that your creative mind will keep adding things over time. If you try and do them at the last minute, you'll often miss things that you would have thought of because you're... No one's creative mind works like that. So do that throughout. And in the meantime, you're going to do things to get your brief together that don't require necessarily having the questions all sorted out. Okay? You know that everything you're putting in front of the appeals court is something that was you've already put in front of the lower court. So you can start by going through every motion you filed, and most of you, if you've been using the format of a standard motion, have been separating out your facts and your legal argument. So find all your briefs, every motion, anything you filed. Hopefully most of them you still have in an editable version. You can use the docket from the case, to the extent to which your clerk knows what they're doing, to tell whether you've got everything you filed in the case. You want to eventually find everything they filed in the case too, but that's a separate matter. What I want you to do with your briefs is you go through each thing you filed, and there should be a section that says statement of facts. Sometimes if it's a really short motion, you didn't put a header above it, but you're going to want to take all of those facts and turn them into a single statement of facts. Sometimes the facts were part of your original statement of facts about what happened from when you got the mortgage all the way through to the foreclosure. Sometimes the statement of facts is going to be something that was procedural, that happened in the case, right? I'm filing a motion to compel discovery because the other side didn't respond on this date, and this date. So that's procedural, but that goes into your statement of facts. And just like you did your statement of facts in order by date, eventually you're going to want this all in order by date. Me, I create a single document for my appellant statement of facts, and I just start cutting and pasting everything that was a procedural fact or a history of what happened to the mortgage or whatever. Sometimes you'll find a motion and you'll go, oh, I added that fact about what happened before the foreclosure later when I figured out it mattered, right? So it won't be in your original brief. It'll be later on when you figured out that something mattered that you hadn't included. So I just read through them and it's relatively mindless. I just read through, grab anything that's a fact, throw it into that single document. And then you will eventually, again, when you've got a little more brain bandwidth on a particular day, you'll go through that whole thing of facts and put them in order by date. Okay? That becomes one document. Eventually, it'll get merged into your overall brief, but you can do it separately, right? I'm trying to do this in chunkable pieces so that you don't look at the whole task and just drown, because I've done that. It's not fun. Another piece you can start early is that you're going to need an appendix, which is why I'm having you guys on Skype. This is a happy little appendix here. You can see how small it is. Your appendix probably will be this big on a case like this, okay? But an appendix is easy to put together if you do it in chunkable pieces. Mm-hmm. So the way that I know to do this that's by far the most efficient, you did it this way, right? Annette did it this way, is to get a bunch of file folders. Mm-hmm. And you take every single thing that was filed in the case. Again, you can use the docket as your checklist if it helps. And I just create a file for it. So first file might be the plaintiff's original filings into the court case, right? Summons and complaint, notice to quit. If they illegally slipped more documents in, that might go into your first file. So I just create a file with a name on the tab and the date of the document, okay? You can choose to do your dates purely by the court docket, I don't personally like doing that. I prefer to do them by the history that I've created in my statement of facts. So I'll have the mortgage, and then, you know, if there were any assignments, any loan mod battle that went back and forth that I want, the documents from the foreclosure itself, maybe documents showing that they, you know, tried to break into the house, whatever. But if you've got them all in their own separate folder with the date on it, then once you, when you keep collecting documents, you can just have a box and have them all in order by date. You find a new document, you stick it in its folder with the date, and you just put it in line. And that way, when it comes time to put your brief together and your appendix, you've already got it all. And you can just scan it all in one go because you found it. And, you know, you may think of things as you go along. Again, depending on how organized you were, you don't necessarily have every motion with all of the exhibits still attached to each other where you can find it. That's fine. You've got 40 days for the to put the brief together. And in most cases, I don't know if you're on a stricter timeline, but in most cases, you can just ask for more time if you get stuck. So don't worry about the time so much as don't procrastinate. Start now. Spread it out over time. Expect that it will take time. And just keep plugging along. Set a new goal for yourself. Okay, 2 days from now, I want to have found everything that I had organized. I want to have into folders. You know, and then you create a list for yourself. These are the things I'm missing. I don't know where they are. So this is what Sam just did with the brief that we're putting into the SJC. Pulled out the docket from the SJC, marked the things where there would be a document associated with it. Sometimes the things are in there is just, you know, there was a postponement. You're not going to have a document for that. And then we went through and we found all the easy stuff. That stuff all got checked off really fast. And last night, Lori and I stayed and found the last 5 or 6 documents that were somewhere in the office, and it took us a while. So that's the way the process is going to work. That's fine. Expect it to be that way. That's how all human beings are. We do our best to get it organized. Some of us are more anal than others, and get it done more easily. But if you just give yourself time and do the easy stuff first, get it organized well, you will find the time to do the rest of it. And sometimes at the end of the day, you go down to the court and you buy a copy of the document you can't find, or you decide it's not worth it. We want to get the stuff into the SJC tonight, so we use 2 that are drafts. And when we do our table of contents, we'll just mark that they were drafts. The court does get sent up the file from the lower court. It's just not organized by topic with a nice little index, so they can go find it if they want it. All right, so that's your second task. Get your folders, get all your documents in folders in order by date. Now, the next piece I would do is to go through those motions again that you've got and look for all your legal arguments. Again, easier if your motions have been well organized and you have under each motion, you've got a thing that says argument. And if the arguments were about different topics, you put subheadings. You may or may not have done that. That's fine. But now I would create a second document. You had your statement of facts document where you put every fact you could find in one document. Now you're going to have an argument document where you're going to put, again, you go into your nice, hopefully still editable versions of documents, cut out, copy out an argument, stick it into your arguments with a title. You following me? You guys following me?
Still recording?
So far. Is anybody not breathing? Okay, Deirdre's laughing at me. That probably means you need to breathe. All right, so the arguments will help you because once you start looking at your arguments, it's going to trigger questions, things you might have forgotten, something that you had argued in court that the judge got wrong that you didn't put on your question list. So just keep putting those questions in. You could get triggered on a question from your facts if you remember that the other side lied about a fact, right? You might look at a fact and go, oh my God, that's one they totally misrepresented, and the judge bought their version and not yours. A lot of you have put in affidavits where you swore to something. The other side had the bank's affidavit from somebody who didn't even pretend to have personal knowledge, and the court followed what the bank's affidavit said and not your sworn testimony. That's a question that you can ask to the higher court.
was it appropriate that they bought the certificate of entry saying that they had a duly authorized representative there when I was there and the person from the bank didn't have their authority for another 2.5 months, right? That's a question you can say to the court. It has to do with who did the judge believe and why. And it's wrong, because the rules of evidence are if somebody is in front of me and I'm the judge and they swear to something, I have a right to cross-examine them. And I suspect none of you were cross-examined. You put in an affidavit, you stood up, you made your argument, you said, I know this is true, and then the judge believes the other side. They're not allowed to do that. Under the rules of evidence, if there's a human being in front of me, my job as a judge is to decide whether you're credible or not. So I'm supposed to ask you, you know, well, Deirdre, you say you were there. You know, how many people were there? You know, what, you know, where had you just come from? Were you home all day? Did you come from work? And based on how authentic your answers are as a judge, I'm supposed to assess whether you're telling the truth that you were there at the auction or not. They can't do that with a piece of paper that comes from somebody on the other side who they'll never see and never know anything about. Which means that if you're credible, you should trump every affidavit they've got. Because you have personal knowledge, and as long as you come across as credible, but they're not even testing you. So then they can say, oh, well, I didn't believe them. Really? Based on what? Because you didn't do your job as a judge. Okay? So those are legitimate questions, and they might come up while you're looking through your statement of facts. Okay. So here we are. We've got files. Hopefully, you're still finding the rest of your documents, creating files, putting them in order by date. You've hopefully put all your facts in one document. You've gone through and put all your legal arguments, some of which, again, might be procedural, not just about why the four